Good. This is another session in our series on the laws of life. Our question tonight is, what is the divine law of evolution, and how can an aspirant best harness it? In talking about the law of evolution, we have to keep in mind that these are all divine laws we're working with. This is not to be confused with the theory of evolution as promoted by Darwin and modified and corrupted by thousands of scientists or pseudoscientists since. Darwin was inspired and came up with some good stuff, but of course the tendency of science is to get all this bogged down and discussion of form, as though form represents a evolution. But it's not the evolution of form that counts. It's the evolution of consciousness, the evolution of divine force. And that's what the human soul comes to Earth to do. And the law of evolution allows us or facilitates us expressing what we learn about calculus, about artistic beauty, about the golden mean, about philosophy, about religion, whatever, through form, and enables us to create new forms and generate new forms. It's like when I talk about Henry Ford developing the assembly line, the first car that came off of the first Ford assembly line was a perfect car for its day and age, but you wouldn't want to drive it today. And so we've had 110 years to refine and perfect the automobile, and it's not just Ford, but all car companies that have done this. So we don't want to get bogged down in our concept of forms evolving. Forms grow or change. Well, the better way to put this would be that forms change, people grow, consciousness evolves. And so it's much more, for example, another way of putting that would be that while individuals grow, nations and races evolve. And we will find the secrets to this and why this is so powerful. This particular, the question, of course, is, as stated, what is the divine law of evolution and how can an aspirant best harness it? Shuffled the deck, laid out the spread. The starting point is the Ace of Cups upside down. The counterpoint is the Two of Swords right side up. The challenge is the Eight of Rods right side up. The purpose is the Two of Pentacles right side up. The endowment is the Four of Rods upside down. The destiny is the Ten of Rods right side up. And then we come to the Pillar of Revelation. The Pillar of Revelation begins with the Tower right side up at the position of the real question. This is the only major arcana in the spread. It's number 16 or a 7. And then we have in the position of the unseen forces, the Nine of Pentacles upside down. We have the Five of Rods right side up as the spiritual ideal. And we have the King of Rods, the King of Cups upside down in the fulfillment. Now, those last three cards all showed up in the last 2 weeks ago in our spread on disintegration, the law of disintegration. In fact, four of the last five cards, starting with destiny. The Ten of Rods was the real question last time. The Tower is new. The Nine of Pentacles was the starting point. The Five of Rods was the counterpoint. And the King of Rods was the endowment last time. So there's a linkage here, and probably a reason why I skipped some other ones that I had on my list. I'll get to them eventually. to go to the law of evolution right after disintegration, because a lot of evolution and growth requires unlearning and the disintegration of the past. After all, we go to the Two of Swords and we see all that massive residue of ancient evil there that the naked lady is triumphing over, bringing the forces of heaven down to earth to do so. Well, all that represents what has to be unlearned. We are in a unevolved. We keep in mind that, again, as we see in the Nine of Pentacles, as we talked about in the interview with Einstein in the From Heaven to Earth series, there's an involutionary arc which is represented by the pentacles on her cloak in the Nine of Pentacles. And then there's an evolutionary arc, which if you held this right side up instead of upside down, you can see that first the pentacles come in and then they come back up as the, in the form of the bird, as it expresses love. So we have, a large part of evolution is confronting the past, confronting established traditions, established conditions, and redeeming them, enlightening them, and that's what produces progress. We unlearn the bad, nasty, bad habits of the past, and in their stead, we adopt a more perfect expression. Now, of course, as you know, we can't expect to achieve perfection in the physical plane, and that's not the goal. Perfection already exists above the mean, as we see in the Eight of Rods, the upper set in the abstract. But what we produce based on those models, it never achieves absolute perfection. It's just like the Ford of today is 110 years better than the Ford of 110 years ago. But the Ford of 25, 30 years from now will be even better, assuming that it doesn't get bogged down with too many extraneous devices for spurious combat against global warming, which, of course, today was, it came out that there hasn't been global warming for 16 years. None, zero, zip, nada. It doesn't exist. It's more like global, what the hell isn't happening?
But there's rain.
There's rain. Well, there's been plenty of global cooling, but we're actually in a cool cycle, not a warm cycle. So anyway, evolution goes in cyclic ways, and it involves much more than just changing form. It is the way we work towards perfection. The motto of this could almost, of this reading could almost be perfection above, growth below. We know the ideals, of divine life are perfect. The ideals such as joy, patience, will, love, harmony, peace, all these things are already exist as perfection, perfect ideals in the mind of God. Our job is to learn how to manage them and bring them down into manifestations so something approaching perfection can occur here. And that's our work of evolution, our work of growth, our work of what we're down here to do, redeem the residue of ancient evil. And that's a monumental task, which fortunately God has set aside billions of years to accomplish. And we often, you know, when we look at forms, we fail to recognize what we started with. What we started with was pretty primitive and not even necessarily physical. And we've made enormous strides over the millennia. All right, so much for my preamble here, or my ramble. I'll get this perfect one of these days. Our starting point is the Ace of Cups upside down. And the Ace of Cups is a huge cup with a radiant sun bursting out of its top, and it's standing on a lily pond heads and shoulders above the lily pads. Now, this is more appropriate than you might realize because you probably don't make regular trips to places that have lily ponds. But we do. We're blessed with the Gibbs Garden. And there's one whole area there close to the Monet Bridge, which is just several ponds filled with all kinds of lilies. And those little suckers come up out of, you know, they're rooted in the muck at the bottom of the pond. They come up and then they have these little lily pads on the surface. And then a flower comes up very much like this. But the symbolism of the cup is quite interesting because those little suckers send a stem up about 6 inches to a foot above the lily pad. And then a flower comes out that really very much resembles this sun coming out of the cup with all those spike radiations. This is almost a artistic portrayal of what actually the flower of the lily looks like. And so this is a symbol of transformation, bringing the nature of the muck and soil at the bottom of the pond up, and joined with its heavenly design, it bursts forth in radiant glory, which is the true nature of growth. It's this Big Bang expansion, what Poe, of course, talked about in Eureka, the Big Bang and then everything going out and then coming back in again. So this is when the Tibetan or Alice Bailey or anybody esoterically talks about growth and evolution, they're not talking about changes in form. They're talking about these big bangs, these incredible expansions, explosions of light and power that reach out and reverberate throughout the sphere or domain of life. And this is actually an energy connected to the will of Shambhala rather than the love of the hierarchy, in that it is not devoid of the love, but it happens through sheer force of will. So what we're talking about here is an impulse, what I have always called the impulse to grow. And most of you are familiar with that phrase. But it's a real impulse. It's not just somebody sitting back lazily thinking, what will I do today? Oh, maybe I'll grow. Maybe I'll learn something. No, this is an impulse that drives you so that when you first heard about this course, this impulse seized you and inspired you to take the course and learn and develop. It's like, and this is what we do. We're here on Earth, but we have a human mind. That's why there's four rods here. In fact, I forgot to summarize that. But there are six upright cards and four reversed ones. There's the one major, the tower. There's one sword, the two of swords, and then there are four rods, two cups, and two pentacles. And so this emphasizes the importance of the mind in terms of human growth. And that the growth expansion occurs in consciousness, the ability to control the form and direct the form. We are not meant to let the appetites and urges of the physical body control us. We are meant to gain control of them, hence the culmination in the King of Cups, other cards that indicate mastery here. So we have the Ace of Cups exploding with this radiant treasure of light. And this is the bringing to earth the impulse to grow. And it's found in all forms. It's not, the law of evolution works through this impulse to grow. It's not just, you know, as we drive through the forest every day, little squirrels skirt. We don't have dogs chasing our cars. We have little squirrels running out to see if they can get across the road and before getting smashed by the car. Well, that's not a competition we engage in. We always stop. And then they stop and say, well, what are you doing? And, of course, in the moment of stopping, they probably get smashed under the tire. But they're not too smart. But they are in the process of learning through trial and error, many repetitions. The next generation of squirrels will come back to Big Canoe much smarter than the previous generation. And in at least no more than a few thousand years, the squirrels of Big Canoe will be able to safely navigate their way across the road without getting squished. That's what the law of evolution does. But it's not the survival of the fittest or the fastest. It's survival of the smartest. This is the real key. It's learning from your mistakes. And sometimes the poor squirrels get flattened in the process, but it's just the form that is squished. The impulse to grow within the squirrel goes into squirrel heaven or pralaya and comes back a smarter, cagier squirrel in the future. And this is something you can see throughout all of nature and all of creation. We're here to learn how to perfect form and in the process redeem that residue of ancient evil. So having brought that up again, let me go on to the counterpoint, the Two of Swords. The Two of Swords is the blindfolded naked lady. She's got nothing on except her hair and her blindfold. She has a not so strategically placed blindfold, but she's strategically hidden behind the residue of ancient evil. The naked lady, of course, represents truth on the inner levels. Esoterically, this is truth, the naked truth. And something that she can't see with her physical senses, but she's tuned in and plugged in. Now, notice, this is the Two of Swords, and we're going to come down to the purpose in a short while, and have the Two of Pentacles. So duality here is important. Duality serves the law of evolution by promoting growth and through periodic manifestation on Earth. So the Two of Swords talks about the science of impression here. The two swords are up there pointing into heaven, and they serve as antennae to spiritual forces. And she's bringing them down in and focusing them in much the same way as the Ten of Rods is a card of focus. Her two antennae come down to a focus, and she's gradually infusing these divine forces into the patterns of or residue of ancient evil to transform them and to help them grow. That which has become perfect always returns to the scene of the crime and helps that which is still imperfect become perfect. That sounds like a divine law. I just made it up. But I think it's accurate. And there's always that sense of, and the law of karma, which is the law of evolution and the law of karma are both subsidiaries of the law of cause and effect. So this is why people who run afoul of drugs in one lifetime end up becoming champions of self-discipline and self-restraint in the use of drugs, just say no, in future lifetimes. Okay, so we've set the stage now, and our goal, as we indicate here with the Two of Swords, is the maturity of the inner dimensions, or perfection, if you wish. But we keep in mind that perfection can only be seen by becoming blind to the outer glamours of physical plane, discerning perfection at inner levels and then expressing it through our use of divine energies. Which brings us to the next question, the creative challenge. Is that what this one is? Yeah, the creative challenge. You'd think I'd know these things. I made them up, but that was 35 years ago. God, I don't have... I'm surprised I can remember, but it is written down here, so. That helps. Anyway, the eight rods running in parallel, all above the mean, all above the bare, desolate, arid earth, in two groups of four. Obviously, we have the abstract mental plane and the concrete mental plane. The upper one being the abstract and the lower one being the concrete mental plane. So these rods are all symbolic of divine ideas or archetypal forces that are constantly circulating throughout the mind of creation, the intelligence of creation. And we can, these are our templates for perfection. But we can go in and find, for example, this is the esoteric basis behind going to the closet in your mental room and pulling out a pattern of genius for a parent, for being a parent, for being a teacher, for writing anything. And you can put on that pattern of genius and be plugged into the template of perfection for a short while you write your piece or think about your kids or plan your day for teaching, whatever. And we're meant to do that. And this is part of the whole thing. These are above the mean. These are the forces above the mean, the forces of perfection. And keep in mind that you may think that you, for example, Rose and I were jokingly working with patients, and it became less and less of a joke as the day wore on. But mostly it became a day of waiting. waiting for Godot or something. Anyway, we're working to refine and develop and perfect our patience or our peace or our poise or our calmness or our serenity or our beauty or whatever we're doing. We think we ought to have perfect patience, but, if you go back, if you dial back, say, 400,000 years in human growth, I'll bet none of us were terribly patient at that point. We were romping, stomping around, hitting dinosaurs over the head and saying, hurry up, evolution. I want to get out of this quagmire. And so we don't remember what our first efforts at expressing and manifesting patience or wisdom or creativity or joy. I mean, look at most human beings. Look at human beings coming out of the savage states of Africa or wherever. And they don't have very much of a registration of joy. They have a very crude, almost sadistic version of joy that they express. So humanity has evolved and developed over a great deal, and we're all benefiting from that. Everybody benefits from every individual's development of joy or wisdom. And in fact, we've reached a stage in history where we know there have been truly great souls that have transformed humanity, whether it's in science or writing. There have been people like Albert Einstein and Nikola Tesla who come in and transformed life on Earth as we know it. There are people like Pasteur that have come in and transformed medicine. There have been people like Shakespeare that have come in and transformed literature. Mozart and Beethoven that transformed music. Rembrandt, Dali, and others that transform art. We need to, and of course, then the obvious ones of the Christ and the Buddha that transform religion. We need to take these things seriously and recognize one of our great treasures as humanity is the knowledge of many of these great people. Of course, there's some that we are in such a distant state of the past that we think that they're just legends, that they're myths. And so we tend to think of Hercules as a myth. And We don't credit him as a great soul, but of course, you read very far in Alice Bailey and you discover Hercules actually was a living human being and who's reached perfection and embodies the, much of the spiritual path in his antics and activities and is now is still working as part of the human chain, but at very high levels. So there are many great souls that we have lost touch with because of they lived and moved and walked on the face of the earth 4,000, 5,000, 6,000 years ago in China. And we have only a vague remembrance of these people. But this is one of the great values of studying history is to learn about some of these great souls and to understand that, as the Christ said, the things I do, you will do even greater things. You'll do these things and even greater than what I have done. So the history of humanity, every human being benefits from what a Christ or a Socrates or a Plato is able to do or an Albert Einstein. That goes into the entire pantheon of human greatness. And of course, that's remembered at the level of mastery, at the level of the soul. And we never forget that. And humanity benefits and builds on the basis of that. And the insights and understandings we're capable of now are vastly improved over what we would have been capable of, say, 15,000 years ago in the final days of Atlantis. So we need to keep this in mind, that humanity and all of creation, all of form creation, is responding to the will of God emanating from Shambhala. But that will of God has created an impulse to grow that is deep within each of us, and we wake up to it, and then from that point forward, we are fixated, focused on growing. And this is very healthy for the individual and for humanity as a whole. But this ties us in with life above the mean, as we see in the Eight of Rods. And this then brings us down to the Two of Pentacles, the purpose. And this is our second card of duality, our second tooth. And this is a woman in front of the ocean of life, and she's got the duality as the infinity sign here, two pentacles, and she is manifesting that which is inner and universal in human focus. And one of the things that we need to understand about evolution is that the law of evolution works by focusing the impulse to grow into the imprisonment of form, the finite focus of form, where we chafe and feel limited by the physical body, the location we live, et cetera, et cetera. And we yearn to be like the stars and free from this. And the second principle, so the first principle is limitation, which leads eventually to the second principle of periodic manifestation until we liberate ourselves. And then the third principle, which takes us back to the Ace of Cups, and that's expansion. So we have, another way of putting this would be we endure slavery so that we can be liberated, and then we enter into a phase of creative mastery and freedom. And that's the human story. That's the human evolution. But in the process of doing that, what this depends upon is our ability to harness the forces of within us, the impulse to grow within us, to stimulate the human mind, the human brain, the human creative skills, et cetera. So we integrate the physical and astral and mental with the spiritual, the abstract. And that's the way in which we create new forms, which then better serve the evolving essence of spirit, which happens at inner levels. But the goal here is to lead, evolution produces perfected men and women. And we need to honor and cherish our companionship with these perfected men and women, the saints, the geniuses, the maestros, the great teachers, the great philosophers, the great thinkers, and so on. This is one of the things, by the way, if you want to understand the esoteric push behind Dr. Lichtman's series on From Heaven to Earth, it was not to share anecdotes about the lives and attitudes of great people that happened. It was to demonstrate that we continue to commune with and have the opportunity to commune with the great souls of humanity. First at a psychic level, and then we branched, Dr. Lichtman branched out and brought in Albert Schweitzer and Albert Einstein and Churchill and others, Lincoln and Franklin and Jefferson, people that would not normally appear through a medium, but did because of the nature of this and the opportunity to demonstrate what it meant to be a great soul. Okay, so much for this. Any comments or questions before we move on? Well, I'm going to move right along then. We're going to the endowment, and that's the Four of Rods. Four of Rods is this picturesque little scene of the city on the hill in the distance, the mansion, the palace in the distance, and the four-poster medieval celebration with flowers and everything in the foreground. And what this is, it's a symbolic representation of Eden, a recognition that we've come from the Garden of Eden, we've come from paradise, and we're always meant to access that impulse to grow that it basically expelled us out of paradise and into the physical plane so that we could grow, so that we could do great things, so that we could redeem the irredeemable. And there's always been in human consciousness and literature a sense of the ideal, but you know, the average human being on the face of the earth today thinks of that in the context of Don Quixote, slightly crazy, addled, riding around on a donkey, serving a scullery maid, Dulcinea, and singing the impossible dream. And we all fall into line. Yes, it's an impossible dream. It's nice that we have dreams, but Quixote went a little too far. He got a little addled in the brain. And so, most people think that this is impossible. Perfection is impossible. Perfection is not only possible and real, it is reality at the inner levels. And bringing it down into our life, whether it's patience or wisdom or joy or whatever, is not at all impossible. Our goal, as long as our goal is maturity and perfecting form life as much as we can. And so we should not put limits. We've put limits on ourselves by incarnating. We need to find ways to transcend those limitations and dream the impossible dream. That's what links us to the great soul. Then we move on to the card of destiny, the Ten of Rods. And this is the perfect complement to the Four of Rods. Ten of Rods is a archer or somebody, a medieval military man with a little skull cap there. and he's embracing 10 rods, the eight of the eight of rods plus two more, and they're all coming down to a focal point. He's focusing divine ideals, divine forces, condensing them, concretizing them into form. And he's therefore bringing them down into the level of experience. And this is bringing heaven to earth. This is the work of redeeming life. This is the work that promotes growth, creativity, through the use of the mind to focus the rich potential of the divine dream. One way of thinking of this is that we're partway through this solar system, which was created by God as a dream or a vision or a plan, however you want to refer to it. And the fact that we've developed a certain awareness of patience and love and wisdom and forgiveness and so on is a testament to our capacity to grow in response to the impulse to grow, which he set in motion, God set in motion, hundreds of thousands, maybe millions of years ago. And here we are in one of our incarnations, one of our periodic manifestations, doing our best to nurture the impulse to grow. And we should nurture it within ourselves and within other people and within all of humanity. Okay, I muted there a little while ago. I'm going to unmute now and ask for any comments or questions before we move on. Anybody? Well, let me move on then to the pillar of revelation. We have the tower, the nine of pentacles, the five of rods, and the king of cups. And let's see what we can come up with here. We're talking about what is the divine law of evolution and how can it be best harnessed by the aspirant. Keep in mind that I restated that question so that we can see that this is a divine law. This was set in motion through the Big Bang of God deciding, well, let's get on. Let's get rolling here. And it was probably 20 million years ago, maybe a billion years ago. I don't know. But he set in motion all these things, which evolved slowly and now are evolving through the human kingdom. So this is the fulfillment of an expansion. It's not, the Darwin theory of evolution was great insofar as it went. And I think Darwin understood that it was incomplete without the divine half of the equation. But so many half-witted scientists since have taken only the physical half of the equation and ignored everything else and have failed to integrate it with the concept that it is the impulse to grow. The law of evolution is divine and it's meaningless. The evolution in form is meaningless if we don't have the corresponding growth in consciousness. So one of the clever little secrets about this law of evolution is that God never intended to just sit back and throw a few life forms down on earth and let them work together and see what would come out of it. The accidental approach of so many atheistic scientists. No, the tower card here, the real question is, it implies that God in his wisdom said, well, what can I do to stimulate this growth, this law of evolution that I've just created? And by God, and I say that in all sincerity and reverence, by God, what was developed was the process of initiation. When a soul reaches a certain stage of development, it gets initiated into the next realm and new elements are added from above, new elements of the impulse to grow. And so, according to the Tibetan, DK, this happened in the human family 18 million years ago, or last happened 18 million years ago. It's quite a long time. But that's the initiation of individualization. And that's what distinguishes us from the animals, in that we became self-aware, and we can sit around and worry. Now, unfortunately, that's the way most humans use this great God-given gift. But we can sit around and worry. We could also sit around and plan and write plays like Shakespeare, or music like Mozart. But most of us don't. We think that we're, the best way to use this gift is to worry. But there will come a time when the squirrels that are committing suicide on the roads of Big Canoe as we drive along will reach the natural limit of their growth and evolution, and they will be subject to some kind of initiation. Probably not as squirrels, but as dogs or cats or advanced animals. And then the next step forward for them will be a long wait until they can enter this system or another system as human beings and start the process all over again. That's the power of initiation. Divine energy is added to the capacity of the soul, and that creates a new expansion, a whole new sphere of growth and new opportunities. So the real question here is, what factors in your life resist growth at this point, and what do you have to do to blow them out of the water? How can you call upon the initiatory will of the soul, or the monad, divine life, if you wish, to stimulate the talents and skills you have to enable you to work at a much higher level? Now, most people don't go through that stage consciously. They just develop to the best of their ability, and then all of a sudden, boom, they find that they're working at a higher level of consciousness, greater level of creative inspiration, whatever. And the accidental nature of creativity, the blank page syndrome, disappears. They understand, they know. It's what Nikola Tesla experienced when, as a young man, he was in the park in Budapest before he had gone to other places in Europe and then to this country. And he stood there and he was struck. And in a second, he understood electricity. He was initiated into the secrets of electricity. And that represented an enormous expansion of his already brilliant mind. Well, this happens. This happened to Einstein. It happened to Socrates. It happened to the Christ. It happened to the Buddha. Definitely happened to Paul on the road to Damascus. And that road has not been trod by anybody of Paul's capacity for a long, long time. But this is the key element of the law of evolution, in that we grow to the extent of our ability, and then as we become root-bound in our conditions, we're initiated into a whole new sphere. And that is very much like a root-bound plant in a pot. It can't grow any further unless it's repotted in new soil with new nutrients and a new wider range to expand. Because growth is expansion. Expansion of opportunities, expansion of potential, expansion of creative resources. So our real question is what do we need to overcome in order to end our resistance to growth? How do we resist growth physically, emotionally, and mentally? What do we need to invoke in order to clear the way for accelerated growth. The next card up on the Pillar of Revelation is Unseen Factors, and this is the Nine of Pentacles. And, of course, this represents the companionship between the soul and the personality. The bird representing the perfected personality with all of the skills and talents and abilities, and the woman standing there, or the man or whatever, representing the soul. And this is an unseen factor for most people because we have no understanding of the rich potential and dynamic energies of that lie above the mean. And so we've seen this in the Two of Pentacles, we've seen it in the Eight of Rods, we see it again here in the Nine of Pentacles. And this is a card that talks about building the Anacharana, or the companionship between form and spirit. And this is the essence of growth. You see the vineyard in the background and the tree growing behind the vineyard. These are all symbols of divine growth. The impulse to grow come through, rooted in divine life, but coming through evolution and involution to the form. We then move on to the Five of Rods. This is a very interesting card because there are four men, five rods, and this often speaks of group activity. The fact of the matter is that we don't evolve individually, we evolve in groups. We incarnate in groups. Ray 7 happens to be an important new group here, but many of the Ray 7s running around haven't been in incarnation for a long, long time. We incarnate in national groups, America, England, whatever it might be. We incarnate in racial groups. And if we don't have to be a leader of the group, we just have to participate and understand that the growth of one pulls everybody along. And everybody in the group shares the accomplishments of the one. And so, for example, among the Black community, they should be rejoicing in the great stature and dignity of a Thomas Sowell or a Clarence Thomas, instead of trying to portray them as Uncle Tom. These are people who are leading that group, or a Condoleezza Rice, whoever it might be, who are demonstrating the ability to excel and be exceptional. So we evolve not just as individuals, but even more importantly as a human race. And the race itself is responsible for the achievements of people like Shakespeare or Buddha or Plato or Galileo or Einstein or Isaac Newton. And the more we recognize this and make straight the way and welcome such people instead of expressing genius envy, the more we welcome such people and make their contributions easier, the faster humanity as a whole grows. And their growth trickles down and lifts up the quality of life of even the people on the lowest rung of society. So that's the spiritual ideal. The spiritual ideal is e pluribus unum. Out of the many come one. The spiritual ideal is a group of people working together to promote the good of the whole. And this is what spiritual aspirants should be striving to achieve. Then we come to the fulfillment, and we have the King of Cups. Now, you've heard me refer to this as the King of Greed, the King of the Grasping Hand, because he seems to be grasping the cup of sensory delight very strongly. He grasps for power, he grasps for money, he grasps for position. But it's not really in that sense that we're talking about this in the card of fulfillment tonight. The King of Cups represents mastery of experience. He's a master of experience. He does not, he's not a prissy, pale-faced pastor condemning experiences. Well, everything down here is sin. See, the sin of experience is the phrase that is sometimes used. The soul doesn't look at this experience in this way. This is the natural culmination of what the process of the Ten of Rods, where he's cultivating, he's harvesting what he's learned of divine force and applying it in his life. He's becoming an agent of joy, an agent of patience, an agent of harmony, an agent of beauty, which were also an agent of light. And so here the King represents our capacity to live on earth lifetime after lifetime, gain all this experience, liberate ourselves from the traps and pitfalls that experience might bring, the sins, and redeem it so that the residue of ancient evil dissipates and is transformed into the potential for humanity and human growth and enlightenment. So the idea here is we're not trying to become God on earth, but we're just trying to master divine force so that we can express it on earth as an agent of the divine. And this mastery fulfills evolution. It brings it to its completion, to its natural consequence. And we tap the rich design of human perfection and express it through whatever we do, our writing, our music, our acting, our business, our community service and love for our neighbor, whatever it might be, our parenting, our teaching. This is the law of evolution. We have this type of evolution within the context of any human life if we harness the impulse to grow. But we have to find it deep within ourselves, not within the outer dimensions of form. The outer dimensions of form are the experiences of life. If we get trapped in them, we're limited. And that's the sin of experience. But we're meant to liberate ourselves from that and enter into creative mastery. And that's what the King of Cups represents here. Then we can sing with Don Quixote about the impossible dream. And we know that it becomes possible because with God, everything is possible. All right, I'm going to stop there and entertain comments and questions on the law of evolution.
Well, Carl, this weekend I was reading Esoteric Astrology for Libra.
Uh-huh.
And I'm pretty sure that's where I read that instinct, intelligence, and intuition are all divine. And when I was reading that, I went, all right, that's confusing. But what you just said, that fits right in with evolution because it is divine. But as we become conscious of it, not it's there, but we're not conscious of it. So let's say an animal is, it's part of it, divine in the fact that it's creation.
Right. Our cat Pericles has no conscious awareness of his spot in the evolutionary cycle.
Yes. But he is, in a sense, divine.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely.
But tonight's...
Let me tell you, Rose just mentioned this, but Pericles knows he's divine.
I think Lyra does too, but...
Yes.
But that was very clarifying in that as we become conscious and then ending with we become group conscious, as we become intuitive, then we are group, really are more group conscious of our place and the meaning of all creation.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And this is the continuum of instinct, intelligence, and intuition is an unbroken chain, which teaches us about the the richness of divine intelligence, and that this divine intelligence saturates every aspect of form life so much so that I can spread out 10 cards here and get a very coherent, cohesive reading or insight into the divine law of evolution, not something I read in a book, but something that is read in the cards. And that's because of the nature of intelligence. And when you step back and think about it and contemplate it, doing this reading with the tarot is no more mysterious or arcane than instinct governing a squirrel or a cat or a dog. Mm-hmm. And part of that instinct is Lyra's or any dog's affection and devotion to the human master. And that's not in a cat's experience, but a cat contributes in other ways. Right now, our cat Pericles is guarding the house from the bears. And whenever a bear comes around, he growls, grr, grr, don't come near, don't come near. Of course, he does that from the safety of a screen door, or not understanding that the bear could probably tear down that screen with one swipe of his paw. That's, the origin of the saying, ignorance is bliss. Well, I don't subscribe to that saying, but in Perry's case, he has no idea what that bear could do, right, Kitty?
Oh, here he comes.
You heard his name. No, that's absolutely true. And intelligence is a remarkable medium of thinking. And we have no clue as to how vast human intelligence can extend through this creation. Good. Any other comments or questions?
Well, Carl, I was reading Nikola Tesla Returns today, and there was so much in this book. I mean, I was just drinking it in. It was so wonderful, and so much of it relates to what you were talking about tonight.
Good.
He was poster boy for the use of the mind, and talked about so many things in terms of thinking in terms of working for the good of the whole, for the good of humanity, not for the just sake of the mind reaching out and grabbing something that isn't useful
sure.
for the whole. There were just so many things that were brought up, and he said it's through the creative mind of man that evolution proceeds. So, and he is remarkable.
Good.
Things. And I thought about, after that I read Forces of the Zodiac, and you had mentioned about through groups, and it had said for the aspirant, the opportunity this month is through coordinating effective group work so that heaven can be brought to earth. So,
good.
I think that things I was pulling and reading today were related to what you were going to be talking about tonight.
So, it sounds like when I skipped over some other laws and decided to do evolution tonight, even though that wasn't in my scheme, it fit in neatly with the forces of Libra. How about that?
Yes.
Intelligence succeeds once more and trumps me. Good. Other comments or questions? Well, that's it for this reading. I hope that this gives you some insight into the law of evolution. It is a law that governs the appearance of life on Earth and in the form world, but it is rooted in the soul. That's it for this one. Thank you and good night.